Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Everybody, and I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Darlie Newman, host of Equitrekking, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 12, 2012, episode 508. This episode is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. Good morning, horse world.
I can't take it anymore.
Thank God it's Friday.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
We worked all week so that we can eat and own a little piece of God's ground. Pushing papers and pens, red tape never ends. The stress can turn a smile into a frown. I need some horsing around.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here on Horses in the Morning. Jamie is out today. She is heading, driving right now to a show. I don't remember what show it was, and I know she's doing training level again with Jet, so she's very excited about that and a little bit nervous, too. And her husband is away, so she's doing this on her own with one of her students, I think, so we wish her the best of luck. But for the first time in Horse Radio Network history, we have an Emmy winner co-hosting a show. Darlie Newman from Equitrekking. Hi, Darlie.
Hi, Glenn. It's so nice to be here. I'm excited.
Well, it's nice to have you here. You know, we've had you as a guest on the show and on all the shows, for, it seems like, a number of times, but we've never had you co-host one before.
I know. This is my first time co-hosting a live radio show, so I'm pretty excited. Usually I can edit myself, but I guess I can't this morning.
No, all the naughty words, they stay in because we can't edit. It just is what it is, Darlie.
Okay. Now, I'll try to be careful.
You know, it is different doing the live show, and it's funny because when Jennifer calls to get guests on the air sometimes, they're like, I'm not doing a live show. You know, if it's recorded, I'll do it. But I'm not doing a live show, and a lot of we run into a lot of guests that just won't come on.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, it was funny because I was talking to the guest that's coming on later today, one of our ranch guests, and he was, he was saying, oh, well, if I say something, you know, that's not acceptable, you guys can just edit it, right? And I said, no, it's live. I don't want to scare you, but it's live. So I can see how it would be intimidating to some people.
You know, we try and make it fun for the guests. We try and be light and lively and, you know, entertaining, and we try and relax the guests. But there are some guests, you know, you do this. I mean, you've got a camera in their face when you're doing your show. So they got to be nervous then, too, even though it's recorded. And they're riding a horse.
Well, you know what? One thing that I think is good about what we do is because we're actually, when we're riding, you're kind of focused on the riding. So you do forget that the camera's there. I mean, obviously, Greg, our camera guy, gets really close to people sometimes. Like, he invades their personal space, I say. So, that can be a little weird. But, you know, people relax just because they're talking about what they love, which is what, you know, you guys find on this show as well. When you have people that are talking about what they know really well and what they're passionate about, it's fine. It's very conversational, which is what you guys do too. So I think that makes people kind of just roll with it.
Yeah, once you get them started, usually if you wind them up, then they just go, you know.
Yeah.
With occasional exceptions, and I know some of the regular listeners are going, oh, I remember that guest. Oh, I remember that guest. We occasionally get usually a cowboy who gives us yes or no answers, and they're the tough ones.
Oh, yeah, I've had that before, too. I'm like, can I stand on that?
Yeah, could you give me one sentence, maybe?
Yeah.
We're going to talk more about your show and some of the fun things you've been doing lately, and it's something new that you have in the works. But first, let's go to Jennifer and find out what's on our show today.
On today's Kentucky Performance Products Freestyle Friday edition, The dress code is red carpet formal, as we welcome host Darlene Newman, the woman who has added more line items to the equestrian's bucket list than anyone. And she's going to do it again today when Jim Fox from Southern Cross Guest Ranch in Madison, Georgia, stops by for an audio adventure on horseback. And then Sasser Hill will be joining us, the author of Full Mortality, and she's also an astute horsewoman, and she will be providing a preview of her new title, Racing from Death. And please join us in celebrating National Moment of Frustration Day.
Is it really?
Is it?
Darlene had
there's
a little
day for everything.
All right,
I feel like there's a day for everything. There's like ice cream day, and
yes.
I mean,
best day ever, ice cream day. Hey, it's time for a daily winning. My daily Winnie goes out, and I don't know if I mentioned this the other day, but I got to talk to her a little bit more about it now. Goes out to our friend Kat, who's been on the show a number of times. She's given us some reports from dressage at Devon, and she works with Draper Therapies. But she started a new blog that I absolutely love, and I'm going to be doing an article for it next week, actually. It's called Eat Your Tart Out. That's T-A-R-T-E, Eat Your Tart Out. And it's a food blog written by a horse girl, and it is cute as a dickens. If you are into food porn, then you need to go to eatyourtartout.com because she definitely puts the pictures up there that makes you drool and makes you hungry. But she's doing all kinds of neat things with it. She has a Facebook page also called Eat Your Tart Out. Check it out. If you like food like I do and Jennifer does, and I'm sure Darlene does, then you want to check out this blog. It's a lot of fun. We're actually going, Darlene, next week, Jennifer and I and some friends, are going to Epcot to the Food and Wine Festival and going to eat our way around Epcot.
Ooh, that sounds
so
awesome.
It's fun. It is fun. They set up 26 little booths around Epcot, and all the different countries and even some countries that aren't in Epcot come in, and you get little appetizer portions, and you get to buy little appetizer portions and get the drink of the country on your way, too, so you can get totally obliterated. Which our friend Melinda and I have plans to do as we eat our way around. But we're going to write an article and take pictures of everything we get for Eat Your Tart Out next week. So now I'm going to be a blog writer, too. How about that?
Ooh, I love it. And about food, yes. That sounds great. You have to tell me what's best
passions.
There. I'd love to go to that. Yeah.
Come on down. We'll take you Tuesday. Florida. Meet you at Orlando. Meet you at Disney, okay?
A little food, a little drink. It sounds great.
Yeah. All right, your turn.
I'd like to give a shout-out this morning to Karen Brashenko, who writes for us for Equitrekking, because she's just a huge supporter of Equitrekking and always comes up with really fun, creative ideas and things to cover. She just did an 8 Reasons to Go to Your Local Horse Festival article, and she does our Dream Job series, which is on Equitrekking, and it's just really cool. I love hearing about people that have dream jobs. And I know she's talked to you, Glenn, too, about medieval festivals. So she's just always coming up with really innovative horse topics, things that I haven't even thought of, which I just love. So hello, Karen. Shout out to you.
Hi, Karen. Yes, she did. She interviewed me because we used to do the Renaissance fairs. She interviewed me when she was doing the jousters at the Renaissance fairs, an article. She wrote an excellent article on that. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, she got to go and interview them and chat with them. It was neat, and she's a neat girl. You're lucky to have her.
Oh, I know. And she does some really in-depth interviews and always, like, just finds information that – and asks the right questions, too, which I like. She finds really good questions to ask people. So thanks, Karen. Shout out.
Well, I wanted to also say to the listeners, if you want to talk to Darlene, maybe ask her a question, would you take some calls if somebody wants to call in, Darlene?
Sure, have them call in.
All right, well, it's
about anything.
Anything travel, probably anywhere in the world, Darlene's been there. And if you're a regular watcher of her show on PBS, you'll know that she's traveled all around the world. Some places a couple of times now. You can give us a call at 347-637-3238. We'd have time in this first half hour to take your call if you want to ask a question or chat with Darlene. Well, Darlene, you just got done with a fun little shoot.
We did. We went to Michigan, and we went all over the Upper Peninsula, We walked along Shipwreck Coast, which gives you chills because there's been so many shipwrecks there throughout history. But it's absolutely beautiful. So when we were there, the waters were calm, and we thought, oh, I can't imagine a shipwreck in here. And then we went to Mackinac Island, and we rode around the island in a horse-drawn carriage. We rode on horseback. Actually, one thing, Glenn, that I haven't told you about yet, we went to the Grand Hotel's carriage barn, which is relatively new, and they have a collection of Victorian carriages. They had a really cute one that kids could drive with their Hackney ponies. So I thought that was neat. They had the Red Slay River, driven by Esther Williams in A Time for Keeps, carriages from all these wealthy people throughout history. So that was a really neat stop. If you're into horses, if you like driving, I mean, put Mackinac Island on your list for vacation, because we found it fascinating.
Yeah, we've talked about Mackinac Island a couple times here on Horses in the Morning. And a matter of fact, Chris, when she was with us, she took a vacation to Mackinac Island. She called us while she was driving one of the horses around the island and talked to us on the air. We could hear the clip-clops and everything. So we had a live report from there. Now, you got to stay in the Grand – of course, Mackinac Island is the island, to remind new listeners, is an island in Michigan there up by the lakes that there is no cars. It's all horses and bikes, right?
Yeah, actually, cars were banned. Automobiles were banned more than 100 years ago because they scared the horses. So there haven't been cars on there for quite some time. And actually, they do have emergency vehicles. If there was an emergency, you know, they would use the vehicle. But, I mean, day-to-day, walking around, you're on your feet, you're on a bicycle, you're riding a horse, or you're in a horse-drawn carriage. And it's really hilly, so personally, I like the carriages. But, I mean, it's an absolutely cool island where you feel like you're stepping back in time, which is what's neat. And we did stay at Grand Hotel, which is this beautiful historic resort that's, you know, been welcoming guests for, you know, another 1887 or something like that. It's on the National Register of Historic Hotels. And if you've seen the movie Summer in Time, you'll see this hotel throughout the movie. Christopher Reeve is in that movie. And I don't know, I felt like I was stepping back in time and just riding around the island. It does make you feel a little bit more peaceful, and you kind of do slow down, which is hard to do in our modern world, for sure.
Now, there are people that actually, it is a tourist place, obviously, but there are people that actually live there year-round. There's a few, not everybody. I know a lot of the workers come in for the summertime for the tourist season, but in the winter, you know, it gets icebound. There's ice, you know, all around this island, and one of the ways they come in the winter for the few people that do stay and live there and keep the island running is they either take snowmobiles over ice roads or they actually have to fly in, don't they?
They do. And what I thought was really, so they transport the horses on and off the island for that summer season, and they do it on ferries. So, you know, that's kind of a neat thing to think about too, is just the horses kind of walking on the ferry, getting on the boat and going to the mainland and then coming back. And for the residents that do live there year round, which I think that would be very strange because you're one of the few people left on the island. So I think it could be a little bit scary, but it's also interesting. But yeah, they actually have these ice bridges, and some local residents were telling me that some of the bridges, they actually line them with Christmas trees so that you can make sure you're on the right track. So you kind of go along this ice bridge lined with Christmas trees to get over and back to the island. So I thought that was really cute.
You would think you were in the North Pole, and it's you know, we're talking Upper Michigan. It gets cold and snowy up there. It's cold.
It does. I mean, we had beautiful weather, but we did have a day or two. Actually, our last day, it started raining, and I was thinking, I guess it does get pretty cold up here. But and actually, it was neat because we took the time to go to a restaurant that's right at the Grand Hotel, where they have velvet riding helmets for the light. There's all this equestrian themed stuff there. So if you're into design, you know, if you're into horses in general, if you're into, like, equestrian design, you can find a lot of fun things to look at and see there. And all these great historic photographs of people traveling the same roads that you're on in their neat Victorian outfits. And it's just a cool place to kind of get a sense of history and really see how people can actually still survive without the cars with their horses in modern times. That's pretty different.
Now, was this the first time you'd ever driven a horse there?
I actually didn't drive. Well, no, I did drive one or two times, but it was brief. But I've done a little bit of driving. I drove a horse-drawn sleigh in the snow up in Quebec. And I think it's harder than people would imagine. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was hard because you do feel like you have so much power in your hands. Well, and I've driven a chariot, too. That was scary.
Now I've always wanted to do that. I haven't done that yet. That sounds you got to drive a chariot?
Yeah, we did that in Jordan. And that was hard because the guy that I was working with didn't speak English that well. So the instructions got lost in translation. We went pretty fast, but it was a lot of fun. But I do feel like, I mean, I think I would get the hang of it if I had some more lessons in practice. But if you live on Mackinac Island and you want to get around, you probably want to drive yourself in a carriage. So, you know, people there do take lessons and they're learning. And one of the guys that took us out, Don Effort, he actually teaches islanders how to drive. So it's an important skill if you live on Mackinac Island, and if you're going to take a driving test, you're going to be in a horse-drawn carriage.
Now, you did this a week or two ago, not too long ago, where you went and up there and did the recording. How long, a little behind the scenes here of TV, how long will it take now till that actually airs on Equitrekking on PBS?
It's actually going to broadcast this spring on PBS, and we've already started editing it. I actually have a really cool promo that's not public yet, but we have started editing. And, you know, the edits take a couple weeks at least because we just have so much footage when we go there. I mean, once you're there, you just want to keep rolling because you're always finding good stuff. And you also don't know what people are going to say. Like, when, you know, you don't want to really stop because sometimes people are talking and they loosen up as they go, and then they end up saying something that you want to make sure you catch it all. So we have a lot of footage from these episodes. So that's a big job to sit down and put it all together.
Now, is that something your husband does?
That's something I do.
Oh, really? Wow.
I actually enjoy it, though. I mean, since I'm on the shoot, it's easy. It's not easy, but it is pretty easy to sit there. And when I'm there filming with people, I pick out things that I want to use. Like, I'm like, you're giving me gold, you're giving me a gem there. I know I'm going to use that one. When people say really cool stuff, I kind of catalog it in my head, and I'm like, that's definitely going in the show. So, I mean, like the story that this Victoria, who took me out horseback riding, who's at Cindy Stables there, she told me the story of, you know, her mom giving birth on the island where there's not a hospital, there's just like a two-room medical center. And I thought that was really different and interesting. So that's definitely going in the show. So little things like that I can kind of pick out along the way, which makes it interesting for me.
When you watch back the footage, are you ever surprised and went, wow, that happened? You know, there was something that happened that you didn't see happening?
Well, it's funny because I also get the commentary sometimes by Greg, our director of photography, and Chip, my husband, who works on the show. So that's kind of funny because sometimes they're rolling on stuff that, yeah, I didn't know they were rolling on, and I love to try to get that stuff in the behind the scenes. We did a funny behind the scenes on Botswana where, you know, I talk about how Greg sometimes invades people's personal space. We had somebody who was watching their horse, and he kind of got right up to them, and they were scared for a second. So it's that kind of funny stuff that sometimes, you know, we'll put in the outtakes, and it's a lot of fun. And then just hearing Greg, because he tells everyone what to do. Hearing him talk to people, sometimes that's kind of funny. I mean, he's nice, but he's a perfectionist. So I love to hear him behind the scenes, stuff that I don't always hear because I'm riding off somewhere on horseback.
For how many years at Equitrekking?
Equitrekking, we started in 2007. So it's been on, we just actually filmed our 36th episode. We have 35 that are complete. So this new Michigan episode is our 36th episode, which I can't even believe because when we started the show, I didn't have all this in mind, but you just never know where things are going to take you.
And then Equitrekking Travel came in sort of as an offshoot of the show, obviously, and it's a travel agency that will help you get your fantasy horse vacation. And that started, 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's been over 2 years now. It's interesting how things develop. I mean, we started Equitrekking Travel because so many people were emailing us and contacting us to figure out where to go on vacation. And I was actually spending a lot of time, you know, emailing people back and suggesting things. And we thought maybe we should do this for real and actually help people and book their whole trip. So Apple Trekking Travel, you can book a safari in Botswana that we've taken, or go to a ranch we like, and the travel agents will do the whole thing for you if you want. I mean, they'll even do additional. We had somebody that booked a trip that we've taken a couple times in Turkey, and then they also did a bike trip with it as well. So that was kind of interesting. They did horses and bikes. So it's a full service thing. Yeah, we're trying to add all these different resources. We've got our website, equitrekking.com, with this great vacation guide where you can find a lot of different places to ride. And then we just started a top 20 ranches site where we pick some of our favorite ranches. So, you know, we're finding all these spots and we're just trying to share them with everybody.
And we're going to be talking about that. Have one of the ranches that you highlighted. You have Jim Fox from Southern Cross Guest Ranch on with us. You know, one of the things that's interesting, and I know we talked a little bit about this too, is so many of these vacations and experiences, and that's what actually makes Mackinac Island a little bit different too, is when you rent a carriage in Mackinac Island, or when you rent a horse, you can go off on your own and just trail ride, just do it yourself. You don't need the guide with you, and they're not babysitting you the whole time. And there's not a whole lot of places around that do that, is there?
There are not. And actually, when Jim comes on, we can ask him about that, because at Southern Cross Guest Ranch, you can actually go out unguided on horseback. And I asked people on Mackinac a little bit more about it, too, because we went out guided because we just wanted to get more in-depth information on the island and really hear from a local perspective. But I saw people when I was there, and basically they ask you about your riding experience. You know, they have you get on, and they see you ride a little bit, and then they send you off. And you can kind of explore the island on your own, which is definitely unique. I mean, a lot of places in the U.S., it's restrictive as to what you can do. I mean, a lot of ranches, you can walk, trot, canter, and even gallop. But at some places, you know, it's walk only. There's different restrictions in different places. So I think that freedom of being able to go out on your own is really cool. But the horses are so well trained, and the carriages as well. They're not going to really let you go to a place that you're not allowed to go, from what I hear, which is, I guess you can't ride off the cliff or anything like that, ride off the island per se. So they kind of keep you in line.
That brings up a question for me, Darlie. Is there a place that you've gone and ridden where you were not allowed to go out by yourself that you really, really wanted to be able to go out and explore all by your lonesome?
Well, actually, I have kind of a funny story about that because, I mean, there are so many places. Yeah, I would just love to just go off by myself forever. But also, I would be a little frightened because I wouldn't know the area, which is the danger. Like, if you're just out in the middle of nowhere and you just head off by yourself or with a friend, you're still, sometimes your cell phone doesn't work and you may have a walkie-talkie, but that's only a certain range. So you have to be careful about that. You don't want to just go off and then not have any connectivity. When I was in Arizona, we were riding in an area, and our guide actually had an accident, and we were kind of off by ourselves because we had to go back and get help, and the cell phone reception wasn't working. But that was kind of like a, and it wasn't a bad accident, but and everything was okay at the end, but it was like a mini adventure because it was almost like, lead us home. Lead us back to the ranch with the horses. And we're like, do-do-do-do-do-do. And we felt like we were saving life. And it wasn't that bad of a thing, but it was interesting because for a minute I was like, oh, we're kind of out in the middle of nowhere, you know?
Have you ever been in a place where you were truly scared? I mean, the situation came up and you went, you know, you've been riding for how long? I never asked you that. Did you start as a kid?
I started taking lessons when I was 7 years old. So, I mean, I've been riding my entire life, but you can't really prepare for some of these places. Like, yeah, I mean, I was scared in Belize when my horse was, like, running away with me because I found out I was on an ex-race horse who still wanted to race. And then I was scared in Africa when the elephant charged me on horseback. So, and then in Quebec, when the horse just laid down on the beach and didn't tell me he was going to do that. So, yeah, there definitely have been interesting situations. But I'm actually, like, pretty zen when I'm riding. I'm pretty calm. even when I'm on a horse I don't know. And I think that's important because, as you guys know, horses can read you really well. So that's what I just try to, you know, stay calm.
I would assume, unlike that one circumstance, that most of the time they're trying to give the host of the TV show a horse that's pretty safe, too.
Well, you know, you would be surprised, Glenn. You know, people definitely want to give me a good horse, but our definitions sometimes don't match. I actually tell people, and I would suggest this, if you ever go on a riding vacation, you know, say that you're an intermediate rider, even if you're better than you are, and tell them, say, I would like the horse, this is what I say, I would like the horse that you would put your child on, you know, that you would put a kid on, and that, you know, that is very experienced, because you're in, especially if you're in new terrain, I mean, if you get there and you have a couple days and you're jiving with that horse and you want to switch it up, then go ahead. But I don't know. I always try to play it safe at the beginning, and I never say that I'm a better rider than I am. But yes, they do blend sometimes. Go, oh, no, she's really good.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Always play it safe on that one. You know, you're right, because people's definitions, especially in other parts of the world, too, where they may have been riding since they were one and riding bareback and, you know, doing crazy things, their definition and our definition of safe riding are two different things.
Yeah, and I mean, what I find is people always want to have me ride the prettiest horse in the barn, which, of course, I would love to ride a beautiful horse, but my main thing is give me your sound horse that, you know, we're going to get along and the horse has experience, because I don't know the area. So, yeah, that's important.
Well, you started this new website. Now, why did you start it? It's called, what's it called?
It's called top20ranches.com. And it's our top 20 picks for some of our favorite ranches throughout North America. So it ranges from places in Wyoming and Colorado to Mexico to Georgia to Idaho. So we actually picked one ranch in Georgia, and we tried to pick diverse destinations and showcase places that we wanted other people to know about and discover, because there's so many great ranches out there that we think it's important for, you know, people to find good places. So we're trying to help out with that, and it's a site where you can just kind of peruse and see the beautiful photos and even just dream about a vacation, or you can actually go to help plan your vacation there.
It's very well laid out. Like, no matter what ranch you pick, if you just click on it, you're going to see the pictures, a bunch of pictures from there. I like it because it has the website right there. It has their email address. It talks about, you know, what their capacity is, what their location is. Is it near an airport? It really gives you all the things that you're going to want to know, quotes from people who have been there. It's a great way to do it. I love this site. And, you know, everybody really wants to do, I think that's on everybody. Every rider's bucket list includes a dude ranch or some kind of ranch trip. We all have it on our bucket list. Like I told you on Stable Scoop when we recorded that interview, that I've always wanted to work on a chuck wagon. That's just, I've always wanted to drive the chuck wagon because I'm a driver, and I've always wanted to work and cook on the chuck wagon at a ranch. One of these days, it's on my list.
Hey, well, you have lots of choices because there's so many great places out there. And you're right. I mean, it's another dream trip, and it's a fun thing because it can be really adventurous. Whether you choose a working ranch or a dude ranch, or you know, or you're picking it based on the geography that you want to see and what you want to experience. There are lots of different choices, and it's there's something for everybody out there, which is cool.
To be back with one of those ranches, you've lined up Jim Fox from Southern Cross Guest Ranch in Madison, Georgia, to join us, and we're going to learn all about his place in Georgia, not too far from us, actually. So we're going to take a break for Kentucky Performance Products first. We'll be right back. Choosing a supplement can be confusing. How do you know which ones are right for your horse? Kentucky Performance Products will simplify your search for effective, research-proven supplements that meet the challenges of today's horses. And this week's highlight product is Contribute Omega-3 Fatty Acid Supplement. The properties of omega-3 fatty acids benefit every system in your horse's body. Contribute improves breeding efficiency in mares and stallions, maintains soundness, and protects joints from damaging inflammation. sustains a strong immune response in horses of all ages, and decreases the levels of inflammation in your horse's body by sustaining adequate omega-3 fatty acid levels. Learn more about Contribute Omega-3 Fatty Acid Supplement and all the other products at kppusa.com. That's Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
So we're back, and I know Jim Fox from Southern Cross Guest Ranch in Madison, Georgia, is coming on to join us. And I like Jim because he calls himself the Guest Experience Optimizer. And who doesn't want to visit a ranch where you have someone trying to make your experience the best it can be? So, Jim, are you on with us?
I am. I'm usually not laughed at before I even enter the radio program, but I think you're laughing with me rather than
I am.
Is that correct?
Love that name.
And Jim, I love your story because you did something that many of us want to do. You left the corporate world. You were in New York and then Atlanta. Now you're in a small town in Madison, Georgia. You had been a ranch guest, and now you're actually managing Southern Cross Guest Ranch. How is life there at the ranch?
Oh, well, it's lovely. I don't think I would have done it had I not had 13 years of experience here as a guest, watching the ranch grow over the years, become a member of the family. I think I'm the highest ranking non-family member here. But I do have papers up that they can sign for adoption at any point. So happy to be here. And I don't think I could go to a much smaller town. There are some, but I'm pretty happy here, having started in New York City and worked my way to Madison, Georgia.
So tell us both, how did you end up there? I know that you were a guest. What's your story?
Oh, okay. Well, to bring you back to the very beginning, we're in the late 90s here, and I was in what was known as an AOL chat room. I don't know if you're old enough to even have experienced something. Yes, that's not a term that you've heard very often or hear recently, was just chatting with, it was an Atlanta chat room, and just mentioned, oh, I have two daughters, they're 4 and 7. I was looking for a place to spend a weekend. My 7-year-old was taking riding lessons, and someone popped up and said, oh, you've got to go to the Southern Cross Guest Ranch in Madison. My fiance and I have been out there. It's wonderful, et cetera, et cetera. So I looked into it, and I was able to come with two small children. We have a 4-year-old minimum here, in part because my 7-year-old with riding experience was able to ride on her own, and I rode in tandem with my younger daughter. They had a great time. At that point, I believe we had 12 guest rooms. We have 16 now, and it was a wonderful place for a single parent to come with two small children and actually relax to the point where I brought my guitar the second time and sat by the pool, started playing music, and when I was checking out, the general manager at the time said, gee, the guests enjoyed your guitar playing. Maybe if you'd like to come back and play in a more organized manner, we might be able to sort of swap out stays for performances. And that's what led me to become the most checked-in guest ever here at the ranch. As you might imagine, I spun his calendar. He was on a book at that point, not on a computer, and said, oh, I'll come back this weekend and this weekend and this weekend. I love the place so much. I'm also a marketing person, so I did the ranch's original website design, brochures, ads from time to time, and every time I came out here, I'd talk about the business with them. We were kind of, as a musician, I was kind of in the gray area between guests and staff, because I was staying in a guest room, but working essentially for the guests, which put me in this kind of interesting gray area between the guests and the staff.
That's what musicians are. They're always in the gray area, Jim. That
yes,
seems to
yes.
Be.
Well, thank you. I'm going to take that as a compliment.
That was,
all my musician brothers as well. No, I became very popular in the Atlanta music scene because they knew I was the link to coming out to the to the ranch where they could the musicians could eat heartily, ride horses, swim, go in the hot tub, play basketball, and all they had to do was play for 2 hours acoustically in the evening for thrilled guests. I mean, it was a great experience, and it continues. In fact, I'm playing this evening with my band. The band is called The Burning Sensations, so we can go into that. It's the name of that band at some other time. But the band is playing this evening because we have a wedding here, and they're having a pre-wedding day, let's all get together and have some fun party tonight. So my day will end at about 11:30 this evening, packing up a PA system. So still a musician.
Well, that's definitely a long day. What are some of the – so you transitioned from guests and now, you know, you're doing a lot of management type stuff. What was that transition like, and what are the challenges that you're facing? Is it the same as being a guest when you're working there? I'd imagine no.
No, it's my hospitality experience had been in the restaurant business, where it's very intense, of course, around mealtime. And here we have 16 rooms, so there are times when it gets a little hectic with a lot of check-ins and check-outs. But for the most part, it's a case of where you mentioned my self-created title of guest experience optimizer, is just sort of touching base with the guests, making sure that everything they're expecting and experiencing is going the way they'd like. Generally, when you work in a place that is sort of nature-based, we get a lot of animal lovers here, of course. It's a ranch. And those people tend to be, when they arrive here, see the pasture, see all the horses, they just immediately relax. So unlike if I was working the desk at a Holiday Inn where half the people coming in had just had bad plane flights and we're stressed for some reason. Entering our property tends to make people unstressed. So, as my mother, who came here, said to my sister, she said, "Do you think Jim's going to do okay?" And my sister said, "Sure. Why do you think he might not?" She says, "Well, he has to be nice to everybody all day long." as an entertainer and a restaurateur and a few other things, that's an absolute joy. I've no trouble being friendly and pleasant to all our guests, and they love it here. So
let me ask you about the horses. I'm seeing a note here that you have a lot of horses for a place with 16 rooms.
Yes, we do. Probably more than we need, but yes. I guess if you divide it up, we've got about 13 horses per room. Of course, we don't put the horses in the room if it made it sound like I was going to do something along those lines. But we do have a lot of horses here. Yes, you are correct, sir.
So now, and we just talked about earlier in the show, we were talking about Mackinac Island and how Darley just got done there, and how that's one of the very few places where you can rent a carriage and drive it yourself and go out unguided. And also you can rent horses and go out unguided. You actually offer that as well, right?
We do. That's one of the things that a lot of our guests really appreciate. I'll say everybody's first ride here is guided so they can sort of learn our trail system and our staff can generally assess that someone is competent as a rider. But from that point forward, if our guests are interested in riding unguided, they can do that, in part because our trail system is entirely within our property, although there are a few interesting stories of people managing to get off the property, but maybe I'll go into that later. But that is one of the big pluses here, is that our guests, whether they bring their own horses or use our own, once they get that first official ride in, do have the option of riding unguided on our property.
Now, are you hilly or mountainous or wooded? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we're in the central Piedmont region of Georgia. The northern portion of the state is to the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, but this is more rolling pasture land, streams. It's not mountainous or hilly in any respect, but rolling farmland. We're not in a flat prairie-like environment here, but a nice compromise.
Cool. And all right, so you brought it up. You've got people out there riding on their own. Have some of them ever not come back and you had to send out the helicopters? Or?
Well, we don't have a helicopter, but we probably would have sent it out once if we did. I was talking to the barn staff yesterday, and I said, I'm going to be a big famous person tomorrow on the radio. Help me out here. And they were telling me about a story that I recall once they filled me in. Our property is not absolutely airtight, fenced in all the way around. And they said that a couple who was riding, they were riding our horses, went down what was probably a deer path. In fact, they were amazed that this couple not only found this little path through the woods, but even got horses and riders through it and entered a neighbor's property. Past a house, some cars, things that you would normally say, well, maybe I'm not no longer on the property of the Southern Cross Ranch. And they got a few miles down the road, ran into some roads, and managed to get some cell coverage where they were, and called up, and we were able to figure out where they were. That's the only case of somebody getting off of the property on an unguided tour. They were happy to be escorted back, and we were happy to find them out there. But the horses certainly could not have led them back at that point because they were well off our property. It seemed interesting that they went through things that you probably would have said, maybe we're not in the right spot. But all turned out well. So I believe they've come back again. To stay with us, that is, not to come back and leave the property.
Did you put tracking devices on them the next time they went
GPSs.
Out?
I don't know if those were available at the time, but we've considered flipping microchips in them. But, cost-benefit analysis hasn't quite indicated that would pay off. Since the horses came back and...
I do have another question on that note. Have you ever had people come out that just absolutely hated the horses, hated everything about it, was like, okay, we're never doing this again. It was a learning experience, but we're out of here.
Well, not with an experienced rider.
I wouldn't think.
With some inexperienced riders, we do get people who, I don't know if it gets as heavy as that. We do have some people who just don't find horseback riding to be what they want to do. They may have been talked into coming by a family member. I will say generally that people enjoy the look and feel of the place. We're about an hour from Atlanta, but we feel like we're thousands of miles from Atlanta. So if nonetheless somebody would come here, usually they're very very pleased by just the environment itself. If the riding didn't quite work out for them, they can sit by the pool, they can relax, walk through the pasture, something along those lines. I wouldn't say that I've been party to anyone who felt that it was a terrible experience.
No city slickers things then.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I was just saying no city slickers at your ranch.
No, well, we get it's always fun to, since I'm from New York City, we do get a bunch of guests from there. They tend to have a different approach to the whole riding and experience. Urban people come out here. And need to adjust. Let me just put it that way. And usually, since they've seen our website, they understand what horses are, that adjustment happens swiftly and to their benefit, I might add.
Well, and you've seen both sides of the fence as far as being a guest and then now working on a ranch. What mm-hmm. would you give any advice to someone? I know a lot of our listeners probably have a dream of maybe working on a ranch one day or even for a summer or something like that. What advice would you give to those people?
Well, a lot depends on where you're coming from. I, strangely enough, I've sort of come full circle. My family owns the Thomas School of Horsemanship. It's one of the largest riding academies on Long Island. It was interesting because I used to work out there in the food end of it, not on the riding side. So I was familiar with horses, horseback riding, the business in a sense. It took me about 40 years to get back to it. I would say that the biggest adjustment from where I was is that it's certainly not a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday job. So if somebody's in one of those, they need to be prepared for sort of fluid hours. Maybe that's the best term. I was here late last night preparing for the wedding that we're having this weekend. But I would say that if you're doing something for which you have a passion and actually brings you enjoyment, 11, 12-hour days here and there don't seem like the 8-hour days at the technology company I used to work at. And I won't mention their name, but they do a great job. But I'm very happy to be out here.
Well, and I'm sure the food makes up for it because I know that you're really into the ranch cuisine. And people think about ranches nowadays, and it's interesting. I think the food has changed dramatically. When I travel to different ranches, I'm having gourmet meals at some mm-hmm. at some places, and I'm loving it. So I know you have a hand in that.
There's a danger of gaining weight here. Our guests, at least, are able to leave and return to their regular caloric intake, but it is a challenge. I would tell you, of all the things that we have here in terms of riding, rooms, activities, and food, for whatever reason, maybe just the term ranch tends to lower one's expectations relative to the food. I don't think people are expecting to be sitting around a campfire with a can of beans or something like that. But they don't expect what it is that we deliver here, which is a little bit more of a European sort of guest house style rather than a Wild West ranch kind of thing. So while we get great comments on all of those things that I mentioned, it seems that because people are not expecting really good food, that they get very excited about that. Of course, food is a very fundamental human need, and when you go above and beyond on something like that, people get really excited about it. I always enjoyed the food. That was one of the main things that the musicians I would bring out here, they would just eat like crazy. I mean, it's fabulous. So.
Well, very good. This is Southern Cross Guest Ranch. You can find them at southerncross.com. We'll post a link to it on our Facebook page and our show notes as well. And we appreciate you being on to learn a little more about what it's like at the guest ranch. And actually, we live in Ocala, Florida, so we're not that far from you. So we're definitely mm-hmm. going to have to put this on a list here. Now, I did, one of the questions I had, too, is a lot of horse people don't go anywhere without their pets. Are pets allowed on guest ranches like this? I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I'm going to answer that question, but first I'm going to correct the website. You said southerncross.com, but it is southcross.com.
You're right. I'm sorry. That's my bad. Yep.
Okay.
Southcross.com. Yep.
Okay, now to the pet question. We do boarding for people who bring their own horses, of course. We do board dogs at the barn at the same per-night rate as one would have a horse. Most people bring crates because if dogs are comfortable with those crates, they will be more comfortable in a stall in the barn. We like to call it camping for dogs. Those dogs would have to be leashed whenever they were taken out and brought around the property. But we do not allow pets in the guest rooms other than service dogs, as you might imagine. So.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much for being on with us today, Jim. We really appreciate it. And we good luck. Are you open all year? One other question.
Oh, yes, actually.
Okay.
That is one of the things. So we are open all year with a little bit of a warmer weather patterns. We're actually rather busy in December and January and February, times of year when ranches out west have shut down for the season, but we're still going strong at those times of year. So happy
terrific.
Happy to welcome people. Even Floridians are welcome up here.
Glenn,
thank
you got
Jim.
A new place to go. Yeah.
Yeah,
thanks
that's right.
So much,
it
Jim.
To my... All right, bye-bye. All right, that's southcross.com, and we thank Jim for joining us today. And thank you, Darlie, for setting that up. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It's fun to, it's finding a dude ranch in Georgia is pretty cool, so we thought that would be something people would like.
And, of course, you can find a bunch of other ranches as well on Darlie's new Equitrekking's Top 20 Ranches website. It's top20ranches.com. Well, Darlie, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back. We have another guest coming on shortly. We have Sasser Hill, who has been on the show before. She has really been compared to Dick Francis. Everybody's saying she's the new Dick Francis because of the kinds of novels she writes. We're going to talk to her about her latest one, Racing from Death, right after. But you know what? After we had Jim on and we're talking about ranches and all that stuff, I thought, you know, what song should I play today? Cowgirl Creed is what I picked because, you know, we're talking about cowgirls and riding and doing all that on ranches. So here's a little Templeton Thompson for you. We'll be right back.
She said, I can do that. It wouldn't take nothing but a whole lot of heart, iron will, and gumption. I'll just use what the good Lord gave me. So don't call me honey, and don't call me baby. Don't call me baby. I ride high in the south, always sat on my own horse, till I'm every inch a lady, from the outside to the core. I take the trail of travel, cause I know where it leads. I live my life by the cowgirl creed.
Well, that was Templeton Thompson with Cowgirl Creed. You can also find all the rest of her music at templetonthompson.com. And, of course, you can find her on iTunes as well. Just search for Templeton Thompson. Well, we are here at Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek. I am here with Darlie Newman of Equitrekking fame today. Jamie is off. She'll be back on Monday. She's out to her show she talked about on Wednesday. She's off doing a training level test with Jet, so we wish her the best of luck. I think she's actually driving. She had a 10 o'clock she had to start like at 5 o'clock this morning and had a 10 o'clock ride or something, so she had to get an early start this morning. And we appreciate you being here, Darlie. Thank you so much for joining Jennifer and I.
Thanks, Glenn. It's been fun.
Well, we are our Horse Radio Network show highlight for the day is the driving radio show that's now out, episode number 66, called The National Champions. Wendy and I had an opportunity to speak with the three of the newly crowned national championships from the Kentucky Horse Park last weekend. We spoke to Allison Stroud, Paul May, and Jimmy Fairclough. They were all riding in the national championships that happened last weekend, so in different classes. So we had them on. That was a lot of fun. And we also had the ADS on talking about the Super Clinic that's coming up in Florida. So you can find all of that at the Driving Radio Show, and you can find all of our shows at horseradionetwork.com. Well, we have a few minutes here before we have our next guest on, and I have a couple of very interesting stories for you from the horse world. What should we say to the chicken, Darlie?
I think we have to do that. That's very unusual.
This is up your way, too. This is Virginia, in Virginia. Let me just read the part of this. A local teen's horseback riding lesson ended abruptly after she was hit in the head by what? Would you expect her to be hit in the head? Maybe a bird? Well, how about a foot-long hunk of raw chicken that fell out of a cloudless sky? That's right. She got hit by a chunk of chicken out of nowhere on her helmet. Another good reason to wear helmets, people. But apparently that was one of the smallest of many poultry parts that rained down on Queen High Farm around 6 p.m. on Wednesday as the owner was giving lessons to a group of advanced students while several parents looked on. Apparently objects fell from the sky, two larger and one smaller, and that the one smaller was actually the one that hit this girl. And she was not injured. She was wearing a helmet when the chicken hit her. But obviously that led to the question, where did raw chickens and why did raw chickens start falling out of the sky? Well, apparently there's a Tyson food processing plant that's near there. Now, they denied that they had anything to do with the flying chicken parts. Apparently they weren't over there with a cannon shooting chicken parts. But the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality got involved, apparently found out about this, and they went around collecting up the chicken parts and things. They determined that they think that it was seagulls that apparently there's at the plant they actually spread, I don't know, they're apparently chicken parts must be exposed to the air at some point, and they have these seagulls that come in and take them, and then they, you know, cart these parts off. And that's how they think that they got dropped on people's heads. I don't know. Sounds bizarre to me.
Yeah. I don't want that to ever happen to me. I've had bird poop hit me in the head many times, and everyone says it's lucky. I don't find it lucky. I find it gross. And this sounds even worse. This is a bizarre story, Glenn. And the fact that it would hit her and then you would look up and see, like, nothing in the sky.
I know that these chickens are just falling down. At first I thought, was it an airplane that was throwing things out? That's the first thing that came to mind is, you know, with somebody having lunch and then they, you know, they just drop it out of the bottom of the airplane. That was the first thing that came to my mind, but I'd never thought about birds, actually. They said vultures wouldn't do it because they don't typically carry things. And if you think about vultures, when you see them, when you come across them in the road, they don't pick their carrion up and carry it away. They just come back. They leave and come back. So that's why they kind of think that that it was other forms of birds.
It sounds like you were half right. Yeah, you were part right. You said somebody was having lunch. Yes. The seagull was having some lunch and then decided he didn't want any more. So.
Well, to make it even grosser, apparently they carry the byproducts from the plant in trucks. And they do say that the trucks are covered with tarps. So You know, I would hope so, because, you know, if you're driving down the road, and you know how you're driving down the road behind one of those little, or one of those dump trucks that's carrying rock, and the rock is flying out and it hits your windshield. Wouldn't it really suck if you're driving down the road and parts of dead chickens fly out and hit your windshield? That would be bad.
Yeah, that doesn't sound pleasant. Yeah, remind me. I have to find out where this place is so I can maybe not ride there.
All right, that was our totally bizarre story. Another bizarre story is the Headless Horseman fell off at Disney. Apparently, they have a Headless Horseman that leads the Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween party at Magic Kingdom that leads the parade there every night called the Boo to You Parade. And there's supposed to be a YouTube video that somebody took of this happening. I could not find it. I looked all over for it. But it's the Headless Horseman apparently leads the parade, and when he came around the corner there at the square at Magic Kingdom, the horse fell, and, of course, the Headless Horseman went flying. Apparently, the animal fell and got up very quickly and, you know, didn't have a problem there, and the cast member apparently walked away and then got back on the horse and finished the ride. And there is reports that the Headless Horseman was not in the second parade of the night, that they were taking a look at both of them to make sure they were both okay. And, you know, Darlene, we had the opportunity to do something that very, very few people have had the opportunity to do. And Jamie, Jennifer, and I got to take a tour of the barns at Disneyland. And the caretaker for all the horses at Disneyland took us around and introduced us to all the horses, most of them big draft horses, to pull the trolley through town. But they take unbelievably good care of their animals. That place was spotless, and they have vets there all the time, and the animals' feet were spotless. You know, these are horses seen by tens of thousands of people every day, so I'm sure that they were taking really good care of those horses, and this doesn't happen too often.
Oh, I bet. I mean, and it's like the people that are outfitters in national parks, and they do tour operating there. I mean, all of these places that are getting a lot of the general public coming through, they definitely want to take good care of the horses, because everybody wants to see nice, healthy horses trotting around or pulling the carriages. So that's good to know. And that's neat that you went out to Disneyland to see that. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, the people from Norco got us in there. Now, we weren't allowed to do any interviews back there or take any pictures. Now, they're very particular about that kind of stuff. But it was also really neat to see the backside of Disneyland, where all the warehouses mm-hmm. are, is where the barns were. So we got to see how the operation runs from back there. And let me tell you, it's as busy in the back as it is in the front.
That's interesting. When we were just on Mackinac Island, we went up to the Grand Hotel Stables, and that's where they're housing these Victorian carriages, but a lot of them they're using today as well. They use the historic carriages still, and the horses are up there. And, of course, another place where they're taking immaculate care of the horses, and they've got these beautiful carriages that are just shining. So it's nice to see people take that much pride, especially when it's something that like you or I are going to walk around and see, which is cool. I don't know, I like that. I love the behind the scenes.
Yeah, me too. I did too. That was Jennifer and I are huge Disney fans anyway, so for us that was like heaven. You know, we got to do that, and it was just really cool. Well, we're going to get to our next guest here, Darlie. We have Saucer Hill on, who has been on the show before, because she's becoming a very well-known writer. A lot of people are saying that she's the next Dick Francis, and I think that Jennifer has read every Dick Francis book that there is about 12 times. And she wrote a book called Full Mortality, and now she's on her second book in the series called Racing from Death. And actually, Saucer is a neighbor of yours. You're from Virginia, right? Darlie?
I'm actually in Maryland, and I read that Saucer has a Maryland horse farm. So, yeah, we are probably in close proximity to each other.
Well, let's say hi. Good morning, Saucer.
Good morning. Hi, Glenn. Hi, Darlie.
Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to meet you.
It's so good to have you back on again. You're just becoming a name out there, and, you know, it's so cool that we have somebody that's writing really neat books that include horses and actually know what she's talking about.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, I know. That's the amazing part right there. Now, tell us a little bit about this book, Racing from Death. Of course, the name is perfect.
What I'd like to do is just tell you – sure, let me just go ahead and tell you this about Racing from Death. It takes place at Virginia's beautiful Colonial Downs, and it twists into a nightmare for jockey Nikki Luttrell because there's a sociopath who is selling diet cocktails, and they're killing jockeys who are struggling to maintain their racing weight. Nikki's sent down there for a special meeting, and alarming events greet her and character exercise rider Lorna Doone when they arrive at Colonial. There's strange noises echoing in the nighttime woods. There's a man with haunted eyes dragging a dirt-smeared shovel from the forest, and there's a body of a burn victim lying on the road outside the track. Nikki is very uneasy, too, about this young man named Bobby Devane. He's a classic bad boy that Lorna's attracted to. He has this kind of raw sexuality and a dangerous supply of drugs. So that's kind of the tough stuff that's going on. And
so it's a romantic comedy, Saucer?
Romantic comedy? No, it's not. It's not a comedy. And there's a hidden meth lab and an old family secret and a body that's been buried in the woods. And when Lorna disappears, Nikki's pulled into a race against death. Now, there is a lot of humor and fun stuff in the book, too. So don't think that it's a dark, you know, dark. It's still considered a cozy.
Wow. Well, now, and these characters, where did they come from? You know, I think that Nikki was in the first book, right?
Nikki and Lorna was in the first book.
Right.
If you'll recall.
So where did this whole idea come from? Did you have an idea of a series in mind when you wrote the first book, or was this something?
I just wanted to, I had written one novel, and I wanted, it's still where it belongs, in a drawer. So I took a course with the Bethesda Writers Center, and I was determined to write a novel, and the first class I went to, it said, bring your plot. And I was like, oh, my God, a plot? So I just sat down and I did it, and I wrote the plot of Full Mortality, and then taking classes from the same gal at the Writers Center, I wrote the plot for Racing from Death. And then I wrote the book.
Were you involved in the racing scene? Was that where you were involved?
Yes, I raced and bred and rode and broke and raced thoroughbreds for over 20, 25 years.
Do you still do that? Are you still playing?
Wow, that's interesting.
We've had to downsize because, you know, in 2008, so many people were hit really hard, and we were one of them. So we've downsized, and we're actually going to be moving, believe it or not, to South Carolina very shortly. I just closed on my Maryland farm 2 days ago, and I'm closing on a house in Aiken. I don't know if you're familiar with the beautiful Aiken, South Carolina.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
nice.
On Monday. We go Monday and close on a new house. So my life
you're
is
actually, changed. So I'm in Bethesda, and now you're going to
Are
South
you?
Carolina, which is where, and I grew up in South Carolina, so we're kind
Did
of
Did you?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Myrtle Beach, and I know Aiken really well. So you're going to a beautiful place and definitely a great horse community down there. You might come up with some other stories just being in Aiken.
That's
soap opera,
hoping.
More like it in Aiken.
Aiken
Plenty
for Aiken.
Fodder, yeah.
Yeah, I'm Aiken to get to Aiken. That's what I'm doing.
Well, this is so cool, and I'm so excited for you. Now, I found it on Amazon. I went over there, and I wanted to see. One of the things I like to do is always see what the reviews say, and you were 5 stars. I mean, nobody has anything bad to say about your book.
I know. It's amazing. Both books are solid 5-star reviews. It's wonderful. And as I said 2 years ago when I was on the show, I didn't pay these people. I don't have any money anyway. I couldn't pay them if I wanted to. So it's great. It's great to see those.
Now, who's your publisher?
And Saucer, go ahead.
Oh, my publisher is right out of Rockville, Maryland, not far from you, Darley. It's Wildside Press in Rockville, Maryland. And they're going to bring out the next book, which I'm very thrilled about, will be coming out in 2013. It will be called The Seahorse Trade, and it will take place at Gulfstream Park Racetrack down in South Florida near at Hallandale Beach.
Yeah. Terrific.
And Salter, you said that you raced yourself. You actually raced?
I did. I was a amateur steeplechase jockey. And I won a couple of races, and it was really thrilling. But the last time I rode in one, I went over the big jumps up at the Potomac Hunt Course.
Mm-hmm.
And in the race before I rode, which was the professional, but went over the exact same course, it was brutal. And there was a fellow that was carried off the course in a medevac helicopter. And then I had my race over the same course, and I never been so scared in my life. but it was great. We won, and it was the greatest. It was probably the greatest day of my life winning that race.
That's awesome. Yeah, that must have been exciting. I've watched people chases that I've never participated, but it seems
well,
to me
I
like...
Well, I certainly would never would again. Once or twice was enough. I mean, it's very, very dangerous. So, but, you know,
cross
when you're young...
Cross that off the bucket list. See, done
yeah,
with that
when
one.
When you're young, you can do anything, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's interesting.
Do you still ride? Do you still ride at all?
No, Glenn, I don't. I'm very sorry to say that I do have two herniated discs, and one of the reasons I stopped riding is that everything I had on the farm were wild, highly bred racehorse types that, you know, were quick and quick switch horses. And I would like to ride again, and I think I will if I can find some kind of bomb-proof plug down in Aiken. And because you
you'll be able
Aiken,
to find one. Yeah.
Yeah, they have the 2,100-acre Hitchcock Woods in Aiken, and it's all horse trails and jumps.
Yep, so. And it's beautiful. I've actually driven, I drove a carriage through there. And that's what we got to get you doing is driving carriages. You can do that with your back.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, that's what. And there's a lot of drivers in Aiken, actually, that could get you started with that down there. And that's a whole other world you could write books about.
Absolutely. And the whole horse show scene, and then there's a big social scene too down in Aiken, so you've got the wonderful two worlds that you find in my novels, you know, with the rich and the fancy toity-woity upscale society versus the backstretch help that, you know, lives hand-to-mouth, so it just makes for great stories.
Yeah, we actually we had on equitrekking.com, our website, we picked 5 great horse communities, and Aiken was on our list.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to a great horsey community. I can't wait to hear more about that.
I can't wait to write about it. I'm really, really excited about a change. You know, it's a big change, and I'm sure it'll be very tough to leave the friends behind, but we'll make new friends, and I'll be writing, and that's, you know, part of my life. So wherever I go, my writing goes with me, which is great.
You'll like the weather better, too. We can promise you that.
Oh, yeah, especially in the winter.
So, Sasser, we thank you so much for coming on. People can find the book. It's called Racing from Death. They can find it on Amazon or also on your website. What's your website?
Sasserhill.com.
And that's S-A-S-S-C-E-R, right?
C-E-R, yes, Sasserhill.com. And it's also a Nook book. And any librarian can and will order it in. If you go to your library and ask them to order it in, they can do it.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you being on. Good luck with the book. We hope it sells well. We'll put it on our list of Christmas picks for this year.
Absolutely. It's a great stocking stuffer.
Oh,
terrific.
I'm excited.
We'll put it on the list of books that are a must read for all of our listeners.
Thank you, Glenn.
And
you're
good luck on your move.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Everybody's leaving you up there, Darlie. They're all moving south.
I know. Well, you know, got to say, South Carolina is a beautiful place, so I can see why she wants to. Maryland's awesome, too, but, you know, Aiken, she's going to a great place with a great horse scene, so I think she'll really love it down there.
Well, terrific. A couple other news stories before we wrap up for the weekend is the Pennsylvania National Horse Show is going on right now, something that Jennifer and I used to go to all the time when we had our farm in Pennsylvania. It's a 10-day show with 1,400 horses in a variety of competitions, show jumpers, show hunters, junior jumpers. They have all kinds of different classes there. One of the most fun classes to go to watch, and Jennifer, what was that class called where they had the actual fox hunting riders? What was that class called?
It was just what they called hunt night. The entire evening was only horses that were qualified field hunters. In other words, they had actually hunted with a registered pack, and that was always our favorite. They'd have the horn contest where they blow their hunting horns and they judge it, and they have terrier races, and it was awesome. It was my favorite.
It was awesome because a lot of them fell off, and it was very entertaining.
They got a little bit better. The first few years we went to Hunt Night was the first few years it was established. It was actually only started in the 70s, if I remember right. So they really, really, really were fox hunting people. And they, you know, equitation, no.
Yeah.
Just point and shoot. They've got a little bit better. They don't fall off nearly as often now.
That's good. It's like a hockey game.
Well, you have these hunt horses. We weren't used to being indoors with crowds.
No, the horses were freaked. The horses were totally freaked out.
And hunt horses can tend to be a little high anyway because they only get ridden like twice a week when they're riding in the hunt. And pretty much they're ignored all the other times. So
they're very, very fit. They're not accustomed to being horse shows because very few hunt horses are retired show horses. You start out life as a racehorse or event horse and become a hunt horse. Or you become a hunt horse from day one. You don't go from, you know, champions three-foot division show horse to fox hunter. No.
Well, they have total prize money of $420,000 at this show. It's regarded as the as one of the biggest shows of the year, mostly highly regarded for juniors and things. They have just a ton of classes. One of the names you might recognize that we've talked about before is Reed Kessler, the 18-year-old who was over at the Olympics, competed. She'll be defending her championship title at the Harrisburg Show in the Junior Jumper Pre-State Championship. So that's going to be coming up as well. You'll get to see her. She'll be one of the celebrities that everybody will be looking for, especially teenage girls, because she's everybody's hero right now, Reed Kessler is. The National Drive is also going on. It is it's a six-day event that's happening right now at the Kentucky Horse Park. It is devoted exclusively to recreational driving. We went over and visited Wendy there last year and got to take a little ride with her. It was first held at the Kentucky Horse Park in 2005, and it's the largest single gathering of recreational equine drivers in the continent. There are a ton of carriages that will be there this weekend. And they'll have clinicians, and they'll do all kinds of things. But there's also a very large 600-horse dressage show going on. Get this, there's a Pasofino show going on at the same time. So we've got the dressage horses, the Pasofino horses. There's something like an Arab show going on. And we got probably 100 carriages driving around the horse park. It's going to be interesting to see them all intermingle safely. Because
that'll be cool.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Darlie. It's one of my favorite weeks at the horse park because there's something literally for everyone, and it's just bonkers. I love it when they all get in there at the same time.
Well, I love seeing the Pasofinos, too. Those are some cool-looking horses when they start to go fast, and they're so smooth. Those are fun.
Yeah, they're the horses that work harder than any other horse to go absolutely nowhere. They put in more effort than any other breed, and they cover so little distance. We have a couple of Pasofino trainers actually in the neighborhood, and we'll go by them when they're working their horses. And it's just amazing to see the amount of energy they expend. And I don't quite get it. We're going to have somebody from Pasofino World on because I don't quite get, you know, it was meant to be a way to get around, but it just looks like they cover no ground at all.
They cover some ground. I mean, I think it's like you look at them and you just see their legs moving so fast that you're wondering, you know, they should be speeding Gonzales or something. But I don't know. I've ridden a couple of Pasofinos and I just love that they're just, you just kind of kick back and you sit there and you're not bounced around at all. So it's kind of fun. Glenn.
Doesn't it kind of look like the Roadrunner, though? Doesn't it remind you of the Roadrunner?
Yeah.
The legs going. I didn't know you had ridden some, so I'm glad that we actually found somebody that actually did ride one.
They're fun to ride. I really like Pasofinos, and our crew really likes them too because they're just smooth when you're trying to ride with equipment and stuff.
I bet you the cameraman loves that.
Oh, that's his favorite. He's always like, I need a gated horse. Thank you. Can you please get me a gated horse? I'm like, okay, I'll try.
Well, the ruler of Dubai, whose name we love to say here on the show, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, spent more than $10 million at the Tattersall's yearling auction in England, helping push the annual auction to a record high. He bought 25 yearlings in total. And, you know, this actually comes, it's kind of a mixed blessing over there because the Royal Bank of Scotland has just sued the Sheikh over a $10 billion pile of debt, apparently, that he is not paying off or something. It was a whole big battle going on over there. And then he comes over and drops $10 million on the horses, which caused a bit of talk in the press. Do you know that he is the world's biggest owner of racehorses? He owns several racing operations, obviously, in the United States and around the world. but he is now the largest owner of racehorses. But you hardly ever hear about his horses winning much, do you, Jennifer?
Well, they race under the names of the different racing operations, not his name personally.
Right.
So unless you really follow it, you wouldn't notice. If you followed it, you go, oh, well, that's one of his operations.
Well, you always knew it. One of his operations is Darley, by the way.
It is.
Which is
yes.
My name. I have no ownership, but I'd love to have some of that. 10 million,
can you
sue million,
him?
Whatever.
Can you
it is.
Sue him for copyright infringement? That's your name.
Yeah. Anyway. Now, he has two airplanes. We used to know when he was in Lexington. He used to come to Lexington a lot. And you would know when he was there because the airplanes would sit at the end of the runway surrounded by guards. And they were these two huge airliners. And one was for him. He had completely outfitted and, you know, I'm sure it was super gaudy inside. And then the second one was a special plane he had custom designed to haul the horses. So you would see when he came in for sales and things, the planes would be sitting there and you knew that the sheikh was here to buy horses at the sale or transporting horses back and forth. It was interesting. One other story, and then we'll wrap it up for the day, is our good friends over at NetPosse.com are holding their annual auction as a fundraiser. And, of course, we know the good work that they do with Stolen Horse International. We have had them on many times to tell the success stories and the not-so-success stories. And we totally back what they do over there to help people recover their stolen horses. And they are holding a fundraiser. They need donations now of horse-related goods and services, tack, artwork, gift items, books, DVDs, things like that. If you go to netposse.com, you will see a link there where you can contact them to donate. Funds raised from the auction go to preventing horse theft through several of their programs. They don't, you know, she started this and does not ask for much. But, you know, it does cost to keep the website up, and she puts in a ton of time helping people find their horses. So this is the one opportunity each year where we get to help her by donating some items or buying the items that are on the auction. So we just appreciate it if you go to netposse.com and check it out and do what you can to help her in her terrific cause. Well, Darley, thank you so much for joining us again today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, Jennifer. I enjoyed it. And as usual, we had a good time just chatting away about horses and life. So thanks so much.
Well, and people, where can they find your show? Where can they find Equitrekking? How do they see it?
You can watch Equitrekking on your local PBS station, and you can actually go to our website, equitrekking.com, to find video clips and more travel resources at equitrekkingtravel.com and top20ranches.com.
Just go on, better yet, just go to your DVR and put in Equitrekking, and that way you're guaranteed to not to miss an episode. Is there a way they can go and watch past episodes?
Actually, it's coming to the iTunes Music Store this fall. So we will, and the PBS stations are rerunning a lot of episodes now, too. They have 35 episodes, so they'll replay them every once in a while, and if you set your DVR, you'll be sure to get them.
And, of course, if you're looking at traveling around the world and looking at having horses be included in that, there's only one place to go, and that's Equitrekking Travel. They will help you find the ultimate in horse vacations, mostly because Darley's done all of these and knows what goes on and knows the good and the bad and you know, who the right ones to deal with are when you travel, especially when you're traveling to some of these foreign countries. So, you know, go to equitrekkingtravel.com if you're looking at making that ultimate trip or crossing something off of your bucket list. And now, top20ranches.com.
Yeah, we're there to help. It's a tough job, Glenn. I mean, I have to go and ride horses all around the world. So,
you know, every woman in America envies you and hates you at the same time. You know that, right?
I know. I'm happy to share the experience, so I definitely
Well, we appreciate you sharing with us. Thank you so much, Darley. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back on Monday here at Horses in the Morning. Jamie will be back to tell us all about her adventures over the weekend, riding her training. Was it training or four-star? I can't remember, Jennifer. Four-star, maybe?
Oh, it was a four-star. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, big jumps. We'll hear all about it on Monday.
Wow.
Thank you, everybody.
Good luck.
As Jamie would say, stay there, health, and vaccinated.